This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Michael Bumpus is sitting in for Danny this morning. I am Paul Gallant, and we are very pleased to be joined by Mariners manager Scott Service. Scott, it's the first time that we've spoken to you since spring training down in Peoria, Arizona. That was a while ago. The world seems to have changed dramatically since then. Congratulations, though, on a season that was really impressive. You guys were in the thick of the playoff race into the last series of the season.
Yeah, we were. We had a successful year. Starting out with the youngest roster in the league and knowing that we were going to, learn a lot about our guys, but along the way, maybe, deal through some adversity, which we did, starting with the pandemic and everything else around that. But, fortunate we were able to get 60 games in, and we learned a lot about our group going forward, and I think we really ended on a positive note. So a lot to look forward to.
Scott, Kyle Lewis, a player I enjoyed watching perform all year. One, did you expect this type of year out of the kid? And then what's the next step for him in his career?
Well, just so you know, Mike, I enjoy watching him too. I think he's really good.
Oh, good to know.
it was a great year for Kyle. He really, of all the guys, when we were down, we shut down spring training 1.0 in the middle of March, and then we came back, at the end of June to kind of get going with summer camp and the season, and kind of the transformation and what he did during that downtime really paid dividends for him. And he showed up in great shape. He was moving great, swinging the bat great. We put him in center field, and he handled everything out there. And then when the season started, he just kept rolling. It was really fun to watch. And, it fires me up when I see young players that put a ton of time and energy and effort into what they're doing and have overcome some adversity. He had the knee injuries early in his career. So when you start to see it all come together, it really fired me up. I was really happy for him. And he had a great season, and truly expect him to be Rookie of the Year here in probably another week or so when that gets announced.
Oh, yeah, he better get that. I will be fired up in a bad way, Scott, if he does not get that seriously. And, when you're in sports, some players, they lead by example. I'm sure we saw plenty of that out of Kyle. But what are some of the things that Kyle might have done that were not seen by us? We can't go in these clubhouses this year with COVID-19 that stuck out to you? Because, when you play that well, you do become the leader of a team.
You really do. And I think the thing that stood out for me with Kyle was early on in the season, he was just on fire. I mean, nobody could sustain the pace he was on. But every day coming into the ballpark, it was really really even keel. You really didn't see a guy who, was on top of the world every day bouncing around. He was very focused. And really, I term it as he stayed in the moment. He didn't get too far ahead of himself. He didn't look back. He just, what do I need to do today to help the team win? And he came in every day with that mindset, and obviously he was getting great results. And, he tailed off a little bit at the end of the season, but it was the same demeanor that showed up every day. So it's really positive for me going forward, knowing that, he does come with the right mindset every day. We know what kind of talent he's got, and he's got an exciting career ahead of him.
Scott, coming into the year, everyone realized this is a young ball team. And the last 35 games, you guys went 20-15. What happened where you guys just got hot? What was the feeling? What was going on there?
Well, I think, early in the year, just because we had so many unknowns and so many young players, really, how was this all going to work out? Really didn't know what was going to happen with our bullpen, our lineup, starting rotation. What really clicked for us was our starting pitching started to take hold and giving us a chance to win every night. And it really started with their ability to dominate the strike zone. We did have a lot of young pitchers, and Marco Gonzalez, what you're going to get. Marco does go out and dominate the strike zone, and the guy started to just get locked in. Let's just 0-0 strikes, 1-1 strikes, and really just throw the ball in the box is what I call it as we watch these games on TV. Throw strike one, take our chances. And when we started doing that, our mindset shifted, and we had a really good defensive team behind that starting pitching. But the key to our turnaround was really our starting pitching, in my mind, giving us a chance to win every night, and they did it by just throwing the ball over the plate, really focusing on that.
You mentioned Marco Gonzalez, who was the core of it all and should be in the Cy Young Award conversation. you look at the other guys that were a part of it, Justice Sheffield, Justin Dunn, I thought they made some serious progress over the course of the year. What was it about their games that was able to develop the most?
Well, certainly with Sheff and Dunn, trying to understand who they are and, you know, how are they going to get, you know, big league hitters out. And I think they both started to realize just to trust their stuff, you know, get, like I said earlier, get ahead in the count. Don't get so concerned about maybe the guy in the batter's box or the name on the back of his jersey. Just go out and compete, and your stuff is good enough. And they start to get on a nice roll. You can see confidence coming, you know, with those young players. And Sheff had a heck of a year. He really did. Probably the most productive year of any rookie starting pitcher in the league, which is awesome for him from where he was just a year ago, you know, where he was really struggling with his confidence and his command. And it, like I said earlier, it's really exciting for me and I know our coaching staff to see those young players start to figure it out and how they blossom. The confidence comes and all of a sudden we look down the road into our future and, you know, you feel really good about, you know, the things that we learned about our young players last year. And we got more young players coming, so it's going to be an exciting time here coming down the road.
Scott, you guys invest in Evan White early in his career. Now he's up for a Golden Glove. Do you guys pat yourself on the back when things like that happen? Like, look, our scouting process is on point, and we can find good ball players.
Well, our scouting process has been on point for a while, and if you look at the transformation of our minor league system and what's going on there, it's really exciting. I spent the last week down in Arizona watching some of our young prospects and seeing, you know, what we have coming and the talent, you know, the waves of talent that we have coming is really exciting. But, you know, in Evan White's case, certainly Evan was a high round draft choice for us. We liked the player, love the makeup and the defensive skills, and he's going to hit. You know, we saw bright spots of it this year. Overall, it wasn't the year he wanted to have offensively. And as we speak, he's in Arizona today with our hitting coaches, you know, trying to iron out those things. That's the exciting thing about our young group is they're just wired the right way. They want to win. They want to be big contributors. And, you know, even though Evan White is probably going to win the Gold Glove or he should win the Gold Glove, he knows there's things in his game that he wants to get better at. And he's getting after it today as we speak.
Really competitive team. And we're all very excited about some of the young names, specifically Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez around the corner. I want to focus on Jared Kelenic for a second. This was such a frustrating year for, I think, any minor league ball player where all of a sudden you don't even have a minor league season. How are you getting reps? You're going up against the same guys every single day. So I can imagine at times that maybe got a little frustrating for Kelenic. And I know on social media it did seem like towards the end of the year he was a bit frustrated that he wasn't getting an opportunity with the big league team. Have you had conversations with Jared and have you gotten a gauge for how he's feeling going into this offseason?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it was frustrating for a lot of young players, and Jared is, you know, very talented young guy, a guy that we like a lot and really see a big part of our future going forward. But, you know, in this game and timing, you know, timing's everything. And it's unfortunate, you know, the way minor league baseball got shut down and really wasn't able, not just Jared, but a number of our players advance, you know, in their development, playing against other teams. But dealing with the situation we had to, you make the best out of a bad situation. I thought a lot of our young players did make steps forward. Like I said, I was in Arizona last week seeing Julio Rodriguez play and Noel Marte and Cal Raleigh, the guys that are down there, super excited about, you know, how they're progressing and knowing that they're trying to get everything they can out of it. But, you know, in Jared's case, Jared's, like I said, going to be a big part of our future. We like him going forward. And young players get frustrated at times. That's just the nature of the game. And understanding that he's still got things to work on. He's got things to prove, and he'll get those opportunities hopefully coming forward in 2021. Hopefully we can get back to a normal season where we can play a full schedule and we got fans at the games.
I'm sure Julio Rodriguez was a bit frustrated too, suffering that injury. You've been talking with him and communicating with him. Has he grown again since he's in Arizona now? I remember we were hearing from a lot of people at Mariners camp in Peoria earlier this year that Julio had grown since the last time anyone had seen him.
Well, I just saw him last week. He looks great right now. Probably the most excited about any player I've been in quite some time. Just how young he is. Certainly the personality, the energy he brings to the game every day, and how he's swinging the bat and moving. He actually looks like he's slimmed down a little bit. I thought he was running great last week when I was there, moving good in the outfield. And the bat is real. I mean, when he squares it up, there's nobody, I mean, nobody in our system, including our big league team, that hits the ball as hard as he does. So I say all that, and he's 19 years old. So he's still got things to work on and things to get better at. But I think it's awesome that our fan base is really, you know, starting to identify with some of these young players that aren't even in the big leagues yet. It just shows how much the game and media has changed our game probably in the last 7, 8, 10 years.
Scott, I've been in the Northwest for well over a decade, but I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. Dodgers, do you think they get it done tonight?
It's been a really entertaining playoff run. I've watched a number of the games and obviously know the teams very well. We played the Dodgers 4 times this year. We didn't play Tampa, of course, but tonight's game will be interesting. Local product, Blake Snell on the mound, who's been really good, last couple times out. I think tonight's game, I would probably lean towards the Rays tonight, but you never know. This series has been just crazy. That game 5 the other night was just epic, and how it played out.
Gosh.
The back and forth. I love the competitiveness this time of year. These players, I think, you know, people get caught up and, you know, the players, you know, they're only concerned about their contracts. Right now at this time of year, it's all about winning. And these guys don't care what role they're in, whether they're coming off the bench, whether they're getting, you know, substituted for, taken out of games, just all about team and about winning, which is how the game needs to be. And it's there. It really is there. I think the fans around the country are enjoying this series. And, you know, these teams are really talented. The Dodgers are loaded, of course. I think Tampa doesn't get enough credit for what they do and how good their pitching is. Their bullpen is sick. They're unbelievable how good these guys are. So I think the game will be close tonight, but I'll give the Rays the nod tonight, and then we'll see what happens in Game 7. Anything can happen there.
And you got Mike Zunino on the Rays as well. Do you ever find yourself looking at the Rays and thinking to yourself, man, they get to do so many creative things. I would love to just, in the same kind of situation, be able to do some of the unconventional things that they do, like starting a reliever for an inning and then moving on. What do you think about all the ways that they do?
Well, we've tried a lot of those things, and I think it all comes down to the personnel you have and how your team is built out. And certainly the Rays have been very successful doing it kind of on a lower payroll number than maybe some other teams. And one of the ways they figured out how to do that is find pieces that fit into their model and then try to get as much as they can out of those individual players. So they do a really nice job. We have done many of the same things, but you need to have the right personnel, to make it fit. And they continue to pull like players out of nowhere. Areza Rona, unbelievable player, and what he's done in the last month. You talk to people around baseball and like, where'd this guy come from? You know, and he just continues to hit, clutch. I mean, having some kind of postseason, but it's a credit to the Rays and their player personnel people to find these type of players and know that they'll fit into their model.
Scott, we really appreciate you joining us this morning, and you deserve a lot of credit for the season that the Mariners were able to put together, not just because of the success with a really young baseball team, but also, you guys, no positive COVID tests from the start of summer camp through the end of the year, speaking out on important issues, playing in smoke, all sorts of different things that were difficult over the course of the year. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the offseason, and we look forward to speaking to you again.
It sounds good, guys. And like I said earlier, hopefully we can get back to normal baseball. And
yes,
really
please.
Miss having our stands out there. Thanks, guys.
Scott Service, thanks, everybody. The manager of the Seattle Mariners, Michael Bumpus, in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. That was a lot of fun. And look, they were a fun team this year. I know that there is still frustration over the fact that they have not been able to get back to the playoffs in all this time. I think it's close. I don't know how close. I would love to say that it's next year. And I think the hope that we all should have is that, yeah, we would like things to be normal and to be actually able to go to the ballpark again. But at the same time, I feel like you want to root for that 16-team playoff. I mean, the Mariners were in it at the last game of the season. I don't care. I don't care how bad it is at this point. At this point, I will take anything. I will take anything as far as that it allows the Mariners to get into the playoffs, because that would be a big confidence boost, I think, going forward. And honestly, if you were to go back to 5 teams in each league making it, it's going to be shaky. It's going to be tough, at least for a couple of years, probably, for the Mariners to get in.
Yeah. I was complaining about the Dodgers' 32-year drought. And Texas reminded me real quickly where I'm at. I am in the Northwest, and there's been some tough years. So it'd be nice to see the M's get it done. I'm rooting for them. A bunch of young talent over there, man. A lot of potential to see what they do with it.
It's a spoiled Los Angeles fan here. spoiled Los Angeles. Oh, my Lakers, man. It had been 10 years since we won four in a row.
10 years, man.
Oh, God.
I was a young man last time they won, Paul. A young man. Now I'm old.
Yeah, that wasn't fun for me, by the way. That was against the Celtics that last time. Anyway, he is Michael Bumpus. I'm Danny O'Neill. You knew this already. It's time to go around the NFL with DJ Wilder.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
DJ. DJ.
Happy Tuesday, guys. First up, the 49ers will be without wide receiver Deebo Samuel and running back Jeff Wilson Jr. for multiple weeks.
You never wish bad on an athlete. Guys getting hurt. It's sad to see, but I ain't mad. Come on. Come on, Seahawks. Take advantage of this. You take an L in Sunday Night Football to a good Arizona Cardinals team. Now you got the 49ers coming in. You don't have to deal with Deebo Samuel. Wilson Jr.'s hurt, but it seems like the Niners are able just to plug any running back in their system, and they're going to do well. So take advantage of this opportunity. You cannot go 0-2 in the division.
No player was scarier against the Seahawks last year than Deebo Samuel. I went back through the highlights. He had the touchdown against the Seahawks in the game here on the reverse. That guy can do so many things, but he wants to run people over. And I love seeing that out of a wide receiver bump. It's rare to see wide receivers that want to put a shoulder into a guy. And he is legitimately that dude. So they're very fortunate that he's not going to be playing on Sunday.
His name is Deebo.
Also,
his name is Deebo.
Great
you know
name.
He's with the business. He wants all that contact.
Hang on a second. Deebo Samuel, is that his real name, or
please,
is that
please
short
let it be his real name.
For something else?
Please.
Tyshon Raekwon Samuel, but the nickname is, I guess, Deebo. Where did the Deebo name come from?
Deebo.
We're gonna have to, yeah, Debo's way better.
From Fridays, from the movie Friday, Deebo. So he must have been like punking guys in his neighborhood. He must have been that guy who just didn't take any crap from anybody.
You're going to hate me. I have an admission to make.
Don't say it.
You know what's coming.
Don't say it.
I already know what's coming. Don't even say it.
Don't do it. Just save
you,
yourself.
I'm going to
go to your house. I'm going to watch all of them, okay?
All right, let's do it.
I'm just going to sit down.
Let's do it.
I'll be your guide through the sequels.
I appreciate that. Michael Bumpus is going to help me watch Friday, which, as you can tell, I have not seen yet. And I have to make the admission on the air. I have to make it. I know, it's a terrible job by me. You win some, you lose some.
The Cowboys have made it known that defensive end Everson Griffin is on the trade block.
Come on to Seattle, Griffin. You wanted to. You know you should have, but you didn't. You went down to Dallas, man. I know you only had 2.5 sacks, 7 games, but guess what? You would be the leading sacker on this football team. You would rejuvenate this defensive line. They would look at you and say, you know what? There's a former Pro Bowler right next to me. Maybe I should step it up a little bit. I think he would help this team, and you get him for half the price. Go get Everson Griffin.
Maybe what you do here is you plant some sabotage in the Dallas Cowboys organization. You give Everson Griffin a text. I guess you don't really. No one picks up the phone anymore, right? Like if I were to call Everson Griffin, it's a rando number. He's not picking up. I wouldn't pick up either if some rando number called me. That's just the way that we millennials are. But you send him a text and you say, listen, Everson, here's what we need you to do. We need you to put up your house for sale and to make a bunch of things that make it seem like you're very displeased to be in Dallas so that we can drive your market down and trade nothing for you, which is what's happening with Carlos Dunlap with the Cincinnati Bengals. Look, they're at the point now where they have to make some move happen. And while I was not gung-ho about going after Everson Griffin this offseason, I thought they would bring in somebody before the end of things. The Bruce Irvin injury stinks. It has really thrown a wrench in the Seahawks plan this year as far as improvement on the front. But they need somebody right now, anybody, and that means a trade. And Everson Griffin, if he's available, John Schneider, I hope that at the very least you are entertaining offers.
I believe he is. He's doing it right now. He's all over. He woke up this morning and said, you know what, we have to get something done. I think him and Pete, they're going to keep it close to the hip. Not going to say much, but they definitely are looking at this possibility.
Patriots quarterback Cam Newton admits his starting job could be in jeopardy after being pulled this past Sunday.
Heck yes, in jeopardy. You're throwing balls in the dirt, man. I feel bad for the guy. Me and Paul were talking off air. Like, his shoulder just doesn't look right. He can't rely on the main thing that made him special was his athleticism. He's getting older now. He's not moving the same way. And he doesn't have receivers to throw to. He's got Edelman. He's a slot guy. He only played well against the Seahawks since then. He hasn't done much. N'Keal Harry, who was supposed to be the kid out of Arizona State a couple years to help him out, he's not doing much. He's not very fast, not getting open. Cam Newton's not playing well, but he also doesn't have a lot of help around him.
Is he shot? I mean, that shoulder does not look like it's functional. The throw that he made, that last interception that he threw, it was a deep pass bump. It just looked so awkward, the way that he threw it. It was this like weird sidearm, kind of underhand throw, and he was 15 yards off, and it was into double coverage deep downfield. Man, it was rough, and this team doesn't look like they're capable of throwing the football more than 10 yards downfield.
Now, he has a violent throwing motion. It's not your typical throwing motion, and it does look like he's hurting. Does this mean that Tom Brady is officially the GOAT? He's been the GOAT. Tom Brady made average receivers look good. I feel bad for Cam. That's just not Cam's game. Cam's not the guy who's going to throw touch passes and mix up his arm angle and do all this crazy stuff. He's a guy who needs a running game to really help him flourish.
Let's stay on this for a second, because you brought this up in our pre-show email. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady this year isn't going to be the end-all be-all as far as who deserves the most credit for the success, because I do think that for Belichick, there are also some opt-outs in New England on the defensive side of things that really hurt and were really apparent in San Francisco's win. I mean, San Francisco did whatever they wanted on offense. And this Wilson dude, who I'd never heard of before, and again, it stinks that he's injured. How was he running all over this New England defense? I think that had to do with some of the opt-outs that took place. But definitely Brady has the leg up. I thought Brady was shot, to be honest. Or at the very least was... Yeah. Approaching that territory, because there were a couple of moments last season where I thought to myself, man, it's not just that he doesn't have the same physical talent that he used to. He's feeling pressure and he's being like Aaron Rodgers with his teammates. And that just was never something that was the case for him. So how are you feeling about this? Is this the evidence? Is this all the evidence you need to say that it was Brady instead of Belichick?
Nah, man. Belichick is in a worse situation. Brady goes to Florida, joins probably the best receiver duo in the game. He adds Antonio Brown, says Rob Gronkowski, go ahead and join us, and then has a defense that's going to hold it down as well. He just put himself in a better situation. As a coach, this is your team. You know, he didn't have a choice. He didn't say, okay, I'm going to leave the Patriots and go to this team where there's a bunch of talent. Belichick isn't going anywhere. And he have all those opt-outs, so it puts him behind the eight ball even more. Give him a couple years. Now, in 2-3 years, if this thing doesn't get turned around, then you start making the comparisons. But right now, man, Brady just moved into a better neighborhood.
Text on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Can you guys think of any player that had COVID that had come back and has been good? Brings up Cam Newton, brings up Russell Westbrook, both terrible after COVID. That has been a theory that was actually asked of Bill Belichick, I believe, yesterday, as far as, hey, do you think this is affecting his mental acuteness? And... is that a word? Did that work? Sure, it did. We're just going to roll with
me.
It. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. You get what I was trying to say here, even if it was just complete gobbledygook. And Belichick didn't push back at it. He did answer the question. You would typically get like a stonewall kind of answer. I am curious about that side effect. Look at Ezekiel Elliott right now. You know, he does not look like the same guy. And there are always questions about, I think, his conditioning. There always have been. There are times where he looks a little husky. But he had COVID-19 this offseason, and he has not been the same running back that we're used to seeing out there. So that's an interesting theory. Michael Bumpus is in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Did I say I'm Danny O'Neill? A bunch of texters are suggesting.
All right, I'll have to go back to the tape and review it.
All right, well, that
I'll
might
have
be
an
a flag
for you after the break.
We have an easy flag for myself coming up in flags at the very least. Don't go anywhere. It's Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Shout out to Michael Bumpus' friend. It's mental acuity. And also, I am not Danny O'Neill. We just found this out. Took me about 2.5 hours. On a serious note, Michael Bump is sitting in for Danny because Danny and his pupperoo Peach, Peach is not doing so well. So this might be the last day. We are thinking about Danny. We're thinking about Peach. And it always stinks to see a pet go through just suffering. And we're hoping the best for them. So, Bump, the Seahawks defense, we know it has some major issues. And how you fix those issues, that is a difficult question to answer. I asked Pete Carroll yesterday during the Pete Carroll show, what would signify defensive progress over the next couple of weeks?
I don't feel like we've been at full strength. I don't think that we've seen the best of us. I think it's going to come here in time, and we're going to have a chance to see us. It's a long season. Our fundamentals are solid. We know what we're doing. We're working hard at it. We did have a couple mistakes like you do, but those eliminated, getting back to full strength. We need to see what Jamal looks like when he gets back in with us and see how that factors, because we were really, really excited about what he was bringing. He'll be back soon, I think we just got to keep hanging in there until we find it. And looking forward to getting a little boost from Dale Taylor when he comes back, you know, and things like that, and just continuing to grow.
Bump, I appreciate Pete's fatal optimism. Jamal Adams returning, Daryl Taylor returning. I don't know how much of a boost that's going to give this defense.
It's going to give him a boost. How much of a boost is it going to? Is it going to transform this defense? You know, is it going to make them a top 10 looking defense? No, but it's going to help. And you don't need this defense to be top 10, top 15. You just need them to be better. And I think they will get better, but I also think that it's not enough to make everyone feel comfortable.
Can they even jump from where they're at, which I would say probably bottom 5, bottom 10, best case scenario of the league? Can they get into that middle class defensively? I mean, the numbers are historic as far as giving up yards, as far as not getting after Kyler Murray on Sunday. Worst mark in the league. The takeaways and the big stops have come in spurts, but everything else, you look at this defense, it's really hard to have a whole lot of faith that they can get to that middle of the road level.
No, they're not. I think they're too far behind at this point to get into the middle of the road. And talking to Paul Moyer, he broke it down beautifully. He goes, look, all right, if you start the stats from this week, let's judge them from there. Can they get into like the top 15 from this week? Because overall, they've dug themselves such a big hole that is probably statistically impossible unless they just do some things that's never been done in the NFL for them to get there. So break the season down into quarters like most football teams do, and hope that they steadily improve and look at the numbers from week 8 on.
Okay, but eventually you're going to get to a point where you can't keep saying, well, we're just going to take things from this week on, you know? And I would say in the short term, what's the best fix? Because you can hope for health, but I'm of the assumption Daryl Taylor's not going to play this year. I think it's a safe assumption to make given what we didn't see out of LJ Collier last year. He has the ankle injury, and that was during a season where he at the very least had an offseason to sort of learn the Seahawks defense with hands-on experience. For Taylor, I mean, I don't know that he's had any. And then with Jamal Adams, it doesn't sound like Adams is necessarily going to be back this Sunday. Definitely not a guarantee based off of what we heard from Pete yesterday.
Can't depend on rookies. You just can't. And no matter how talented they are, no matter what they did in college and how they looked with their combine or whatnot, you cannot depend on rookies. Now, they can contribute, and if they do end up being one of your go-to guys, then good for you. You struck gold. But typically, you just can't do that, especially when you're depending on a rookie to really change the identity of a defense, start getting sacks, because that's just not what they do. They have 9 sacks, they're on pace for 24 sacks. The Steelers have 26 sacks right now, and the Hawks are on pace for 24 sacks. You can't ask a rookie to come in and change the game like that. And then Jamal Adams, I think Jamal Adams getting healthy is a morale thing and an intensity thing. Maybe they make a few more plays in the secondary. Maybe there's a couple more 3-and-outs. But now you're asking your strong safety to lead the charge when it comes to sacking the quarterback. So does that mean you're going to be really aggressive? So you're going to put more pressure on the back end because you have less guys in coverage? There are a bunch of ways that we can sit here and say this is what this defense needs to do to fix it. The guys who have the best idea are the guys who are in VMAC with them, who are practicing with them, scheming with them. It's up to them to kind of figure this thing out. And we'll see what they do. But if they do not make a move by November 3rd, if they do not make a move, I will be highly disappointed. And if they don't make a move, that means that Pete Carroll is telling the truth. He thinks that he's good with their guys. They're going to get healthy and they're going to get better.
I honestly think he is telling the truth too. And that does concern me a little bit. I hope that a move of some sort is made. Some people have suggested that that move bump be the Seahawks firing defensive coordinator Ken Norton. When asked about Ken Norton's performance this year and the way that the defense has struggled, this is what Pete had to say.
Well, we're continuing to work. I'm in there too with them, you know, so I'm all part of that, and I'm not separated from anything here. That we have to keep working to make our, put our players in the best positions to be aggressive and to be effective, and we need to help them more in our pressure. And we did not try to get after them very much last night. We didn't. That was not part of the plan going in. And when we needed it, we needed to adjust. And I wish I would have got that done. Kenny and I are in that working that stuff out. And my assessment is that we're working really hard with our guys to get them in the right spots. I'd really like to feel the continuity of everybody that we can count on. We're not quite there yet. And I really think that there's, because of the intent and the focus and the guys playing hard and running and hitting, that we're going to make a turn. And we're going to turn for the better, and it's going to make a big difference in this season.
Here's what I've got to say, Bump, to the people that would like to move on from Ken Norton. While I understand it, what does putting a head up on a proverbial spike do to make the defense better now, especially when Ken Norton's a part of the collaborative process defensively? I'm not suggesting that he's this mastermind or anything like that. I'm not even necessarily defending him. I just don't know that moving on from a guy to show that there is this accountability. These players know there's accountability. It's the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't really know what it would accomplish.
No, I don't think that's the move. It's deeper than just one coach. there's a lot of stuff going on there. What I appreciate about that snippet from Pete Carroll, he pretty much said, look, you got beef with him, you got beef with me. We're in this thing together. That's just a sign of a great leader. You can talk all you want about this defense and what everyone needs to do. That's what we're here for, to speculate and talk about stories and keep the party going. But Pete, being the leader that he is, he goes, nah, I'm in there. He said it twice in that one snippet. I'm in there with Norton. Me and him are trying to figure this out, trying to take some of the heat off of him and be like, look, if you guys trust me, the guy who's been here for 10 years, who has made this franchise one of the most successful franchises the past decade, then relax and let me handle this. So I appreciate that from Pete. Getting rid of Ken Norton is not the move right now. What the move is, in my opinion, are making moves, trading, getting other bodies in here.
Yep. Yeah, you got to trade for somebody. And what they actually can get, I'm not sure. I also want to push back at something else, Bump. This has been driving me crazy. I have never understood the Dan Quinn fascination this year. And while I understand that he was the defensive coordinator of the Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl, does Dan Quinn deserve that much credit for that defense? And I ask that because, you know, we take a look at this defense now with Pete Carroll. It's Pete Carroll's defense with Ken Norton Jr. helping out. It was Pete Carroll's defense with Dan Quinn helping out. It was Pete Carroll's defense with Gus Bradley helping out. Gus Bradley, though, I think laid out the foundation for that defense, as DJ brought up to me before the show. It's a great point. Like, that's a guy who was there at the very beginning. 2013, 2014, when Dan Quinn's the actual defensive coordinator. Man, they were loaded with talent. Like, what was he necessarily doing to get them to a higher level? And I remember, Bump, we talked about how on the defensive line, like he was helping out with the defensive line, but also they had a lot of really good defensive linemen back then, which they don't have now. And I also just look at Quinn's performance. He had plenty of time to set up a defensive system in Atlanta. And per DVOA, in his 6 years there, and I count the sixth one even though he didn't make it through, they ranked 18th, 19th, 17th, 30th, 17th, and now are 25th. So I just don't understand why the idea of bringing in Dan Quinn is one that anyone is really seriously entertaining. I just don't think that would really add a whole lot of juice to this defense.
Because it's a feel-good story. That's what happens here in Seattle. Guys come back home, and they retire here, and it sounds good. It feels good. But end of the day, Talent doesn't win without coaching. Coaching doesn't win without talent. You can be the greatest coach in the world, and if you don't have the guys who can really ball out, then you're not going to win. You can have all the talent in the world as players, as a unit. If you don't have a coach who understands how to use that talent, you're not going to win. Like, people try to divide it. Like, it's two stories to it. It's either the coaching or it's the players. Man, those things go together. This is a team sport. It's a team effort. Everyone has to be on the same page. Dan Quinn has some ballers, man. Some ballers. There's about, what, four Hall of Famers on that defense. Mm-hmm. He has some ballers. And he did a great job of coaching that talent, of putting them in the right positions. But end of the day, if he doesn't have Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Clemens, like, Bobby, that just, it doesn't happen like that. So let's try not to divide coaching and players and realize that it's a marriage and you have to have the right mesh.
I'm going
to
divide it anyway, though, just because this is sports talk radio. It's on the players, right? This isn't a coaching thing. This is a players thing. The players just aren't playing well enough, and maybe it's because some of these guys are being put in spots that they honestly shouldn't be put into. On other teams, maybe they're backups. On other teams, maybe they're not starters. But that's the way I look at it. Do you feel the same way? Because I think that goes back to why we both feel that they need to make a trade by Tuesday's deadline.
I think in certain cases, like for example, bugs me. I mentioned it the first hour. 3rd and 5, your corner's playing 8 yards off. That's coaching. Mm. He's not doing that to do it. He's being coached. Look, this is how we're going to play that position. So in that sense, that is coaching. Now, when you talk about the defensive line, again, go back to the defensive line. There's only so much you can do on a defensive line. You only stunt so many times. You can slant this way. You can slant that way. End of the day, can you beat the guy in front of you, keep contained, or collapse the pocket and get to the quarterback? In that sense, I feel like then it's personnel. Are you going to be disciplined enough to keep contained and not go inside? In that case, it's a mix. It's personnel and it's coaching. Maybe the coach didn't stress enough. Look, you do not go inside against Kyler Murray. You stay outside. Then maybe the player's like, you know what? I'm going to take the bait. I'm going to go inside. Now you got to meet in the middle. So there are certain situations for each, but in my opinion, end of the day, they all come together.
He is Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant, not Danny O'Neill. But if you want to hear me call myself Danny O'Neill in an oblivious fashion, you will get to hear that next in Flags.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Closing time. Doesn't match with this song. Nope. Nope. We tried. We failed. We failed another time this morning. It wasn't that long ago. I'd like to say it was due to a lack of caffeine in the system. Michael Bumpus and DJ Wilder. No, it's my own small, tiny brain. I thought I was Danny O'Neill for a moment. He is Michael Bumpus. I'm Danny O'Neill. Yeah, that happens. You can keep playing that so that I'll never do it again. He is Michael Bumpus. I'm Danny O'Neill. I don't know what else to say other than, like, wow, that's not good. He is Michael Bumpus. I'm Danny O'Neill. Paul Gallant. That is my name. I'm going to look at myself in the mirror like I'm Jack Handy. Paul, you're handsome. And gosh darn it, you mean something. But your name is Paul, too, so remember that. You're not Danny O'Neill. All right, it's that time. Let's raise some flags. Let's throw some flags. DJ Wilder, you get to start.
I'm raising a flag for Cowboys fans. Your defense is awful. Your team is just awful. And now your defensive coordinator can't even prevent Tabasco from getting in his eye.
Obviously, the frustration for him as well is just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody... Whoops, excuse me. I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh,
never good.
It's terrible. Jeez. I'm sorry.
You know, just normal things. Oh, I got some Tabasco on my finger from breakfast this morning. It's been about 5 hours since breakfast. Cowboys fans, I mean, I'm sorry for you, but also I laugh in your despair.
How do you have Tabasco sauce on your hands when you're at the press conference podium? And I ask this as someone who is weirdly... I don't deal well with things that are on my hands, on my fingertips. though I do currently have some epoxy resin on my left middle finger that has caused a little bit of desensitivity. I'm going to have to wait for that to come off, I guess. So maybe I'm a bit of a fraud in saying this, but I mean, it seems pretty smart and obvious bump after eating something with Tabasco sauce to wipe the hands off a little bit.
20 seconds. Wash your hands for 20 seconds. And my favorite part about that is the report in the back co-signing. Co-signing, never good. Never good. Of course, it's never good. Thanks for the co-sign, though. I appreciate the co-sign.
Yeah, but you know what? That's the funny thing, too. And I'll be honest, I've been guilty of this before. We all end up being a bunch of chuckleheads when we're in these podium settings. It's something that's not even that funny. This was something to be somewhat ridiculed. You mentioned the 20-second rule bump, and I'm sure that this is something that you already were instilling in your wee children, because that is something that I imagine you got to get them to do all the time.
Wash your filthy hands. Kids are the dirtiest, they're a walking bacteria. They have to wash their hands every 10 minutes.
Bump, flag time for you.
Flag. I'm going to raise a flag for Pete Carroll, man, because he is stepping in front of everybody, and he is saying, look, stay positive. We're going to figure this out. Let's not forget they're 5-1, and then they're calling for Ken Norton, and he's standing in front of Ken Norton. Nah, that's my guy. We're in this together. In a league, NFL, which stands for no bleeping loyalty, he is showing that he is loyal to his guys, and he's going to take the bullets for him. I can appreciate that. Big ups, Pete Carroll.
Yeah, he's got that fatal optimism, and when the ship gets rocky, you need it, but you do need some change, and I'm hoping that John Schneider isn't listening to what Pete Carroll is saying and thinking to himself, yeah, we're fine, but I know that he's not. That's not how he operates.
Nah, heck no.
And I think over the next week, they're going to have to make a move. I don't know what the percentage chance is that they do make a trade to bring in somebody else to help the defense out, but I sure hope that we see it. My flag. I mean, I should just throw it again at myself for forgetting what my name was, but instead, look, I'm going to throw a flag at Carlos Dunlap. Getting benched stinks. You're a veteran. You've been in the NFL for a long time. The way that he is handling it is like a child. Having a blow up on the sideline with one of your assistant coaches, putting your house up for sale right after the game. This is a Bengals team that, yes, is going in a different direction that you're probably not a part of. But at the same time, does looking like this, does it make you think that you're going to get a job elsewhere? Do you think that people are going to look kindly on the way that things are going right now? And there are some desperate teams out there, but here's the other thing. The Bengals traditionally are a team that does not like to wheel and deal. So out of spite, there's a chance that the Bengals might keep Dunlap around just because they want him. That's how they roll.
It's 2020, Paul. That's what you do. You don't like something, you go to social media, you complain, you pout, you do all that stuff. That's what the world is today. So it doesn't surprise me. Not a great move for a 31-year-old man who probably has a family, and you know he's not a young buck. So you would think that he would approach this situation differently. But it's worked for some guys. It's worked for Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he got out of there, got a new deal.
It did. You're right, and look, he's my age. I feel like, though, there are better ways to grease the wheel to get out of town. It's, what's the saying? Honey, not vinegar, attracts the fly. I think that's the saying. We're just butchering sayings today, because that's what I do, because my brain is small, and I forget my name all the time. Lots of thanks to go around for today's program. Michael Bumpus, thank you so much for joining me and filling in for one Danny O'Neill.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I'm sending love Danny's way, man. Hope it all works out for you, buddy.
100%. Danny, for those who don't know, out this morning because his pup, Peach, not doing so well. We're thinking about Danny. We're thinking about Peach. For DJ Wilder, for Brock Heward, for John Clayton, and for Scott Service, who joined us earlier. Check out our interview with him on the podcast. This has been Danny Gallant. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell, and you will hear us on Bump Day with more Michael Bumpus tomorrow.